G'day everybody, those who don't know who I am, I'm Alistair Thompson from Scoop.co.nz, which is unusual in the current company of being a journalist-owned publication. This is a bit of background, so I'm a member of the proprietor as well as a manager and an editor, Katie Ryder. Scoop has roughly 500,000 readers a month, which puts us as the number 3 New Zealand website. We have 200,000 New Zealand readers a month, which makes us running equal with TVNZ and TV3. We have 4 full-time staff and 3 part-time staff. And recently we've joined forces with a couple of blogs, which were run by journalists, and that's the fact that we've put an economy of scale means that they can now earn some money as well. I'd like to sort of use my talk to talk a little bit about what we've been talking about for the last 2 days and perhaps sum a little bit of it up. This meeting has been called, I think, because of a crisis more in print journalism than one in journalism in general, although there's obviously journalism issues in general. But in print media in particular, the last 20 years has seen a gradual decline, and we're now facing a situation where the onset of the online media and declining classified revenues have created a real crisis. And in practical terms, what that means is that 20 years ago I got a job. Out of 19 years old, of the Dom, paying $32,000 plus overtime. I doubt journalists starting now are getting that much money. And that wasn't that unusual, I mean, it was relatively unusual in those days, but it certainly wasn't completely impossible. And it's a shame that, and even at that, that most of the colleagues that I knew from those days are now in PR, because the salary ceiling for journalists seems to be around $60,000-$70,000 mark in print journalists, which is just not enough money for most people to have mortgages or support families. In that time also, we've seen what remained of New Zealand's not centrally owned, conglomerate owned publications sucked in. There's almost no publications in this country which are not owned. I mean, the exception is the Allied newspaper group that Mark belongs to. And what he says is quite encouraging.
Murray.
And what they say is it's not typical of the way I think most publications in New Zealand are managed. They're generally managed with an attempt to try and return investment for their owners, and as people have outlined, those media companies have high levels of debt. The private equity investors have even higher levels of debt. They're expected to produce profit, and Judy was talking about 25% profit was traditionally earned by some media companies, and now that they're down to sort of 13%. New Zealand's also on the edge of the world, and these multinational corporations treat us as provincials. We're a provincial part of Australia's media network. Australia's a provincial part of Rupert Murdoch's media network. Tony O'Reilly's money and attention goes into the Independent, not into the New Zealand Herald. And as we see the future unfold, I think that we are fooling ourselves if we don't think that there is going to be even greater change and even more dramatic economic problems for newspaper owners in the coming years. In this context, New Zealand will be a cash cow, providing costs to its provinces, unless we do our very, very best to try and form a relationship with our current companies to prevent them from behaving that way. In this context, the internet is being sometimes seen by some in our profession as part of the problem, but I think it's also a solution, both for us as journalists and for journalism, but also for the old media. If we can teach the newspapers to transition or help them transition to the new media to become new media companies, which is very difficult, because as Chris Warren was saying yesterday, that it's not their core competence, then they will continue to prosper and they will continue to be able to employ us. However, that requires them to understand it, and there's very little evidence that they So, talking about the future, what's going to happen from here? Fairfax has Trademe, which means it has a cash cow producing a whole lot of money, which allows it to pay its debts, produce some money, allows it to reinvest, allows it to try to reinvent itself. APN doesn't. APN is panicking at this point in time. They're investing vast amounts of money in trying to move online, and it's not certain whether it will produce the revenues. Maybe it will. The online advertising revenue market is very, very buoyant. It's benefiting from it. But we don't have the level of embedded costs that these big other organisations have. If they don't manage to transform, then they will fail as companies. And the fact that they will be competing with online media who are fast and more able to move, and who don't have millions of dollars of debt to support, means that they're going to find it difficult. In addition, we've got 20 years of effective management laziness, which has been embedded into our printing industry in this company, where people have been promoted not because of competence, which I think is something a lot of us are aware of. The companies are controlled from the centre and they're loaded. So what are our survival strategies in this situation? As journalists first, let's talk about, I think one of the things that we should do is we should embrace new technologies, we should get blogs, we should talk to one another, we should know, we are doing this a lot. Kim Griggs is freelancing network, or she helps, is involved in it. There's a Journs online discussion group which coordinates a lot of that discussion. This meeting, other meetings like this, are going to be very important in the coming years. Journalists need to upskill. You need to get digital cameras, you need to get digital audio recorders, you need to get computers, and you need to know how to use them. And you need to collaborate and collectivise. The internet as a media, which is the future for all platforms, I mean, convergence is what we're talking about here, is something that, as journalists, if you want to continue to be involved, you're going to need to be familiar with it. The area of newspapers in particular, Murray's comments about community newspapers, I think, are very apt. The community newspaper model is the model which has got the most commercial viability in the future, because small geographic areas are still accessible from an advertising point of view and they're not accessible from an internet point of view, from an advertising point of view yet. You can't advertise on the internet to Karori very effectively, but a newspaper can. Technology is going to make it possible for people to develop micro newspapers. Very, very soon I can imagine situations where it's going to be enormously simple to combine your resources with those of somebody who's perhaps an advertiser or used to be a newspaper sales advertising, set up your own little micro newspaper, get copy from the school or the student news networks and various things like that, collaborate, write a bit of freelance copy, and maybe make enough money to support yourself. Public broadcasting, of course, is vital, and I think the discussion this morning was very interesting in that regard. Politically, we need to think about what commerce controls should be placed over. I mean, New Zealand has a completely deregulated market. If the companies start failing and start behaving in an anti-competitive, unpleasant fashion and start buying and closing down publications and destroying our industry, perhaps some political intervention might be useful. We should prepare for the unexpected. Going forward into the future, I think a lot of people are not fully aware of perhaps what the internet means. And I've got a couple of little points I'd point to put down here. Principles about what the internet means for media. One, a classified advert printed in 250,000 copies or 1 million copies no longer makes any economic sense at all. Up until now, space limitations and timing limitations have influenced the way the print media and the electronic media created all their copy. So there was limitations about, there was gatekeepers in terms of, and there was space in the newspaper, and there was competition for that space. And in relation to radio and TV, there was only a limited amount of time and bulletins, and there was timing, and your story might get run in the morning, wouldn't get run in the afternoon. None of that applies anymore. All electronic media is going to be on demand, and there is no limitations for space. People can write as much as they want, as long as it's good enough, and if people are interested in it, then you'll be able to find an audience for it. Which completely alters the way in which our, we think about the product that we create. The means of distribution is now accessible to all. Up until now, the gatekeepers have been the people who own the broadcasting frequencies, the transmitters, the prints, the presses, and the markets and the advertising markets. Those things are not true anymore, and won't be increasingly. My personal view, which I think is probably a bit of an extremist view, is that I think you will also see the destruction of what we now see as copyright defamation and censorship. Because the internet just doesn't really, provide an environment in which those concepts really live. As far as the EPMU and journalists are concerned, freelancers need, there's going to be a shift to freelancing amongst our profession in general. I think that in the transition period, a lot of the publications are not going to be able to pay people as much as they did, and we're going to have quasi-jobs where maybe you work 2 or 3 hours, 2 or 3 days a week for a publication, plus you do a bit of freelancing, plus you get a bit of income from your blog, plus you do whatever else you do, maybe a bit of PR or something. Which creates problems for us as an industry, but I think that is where we're going to be going, a lot of us. In terms of the EPMU, I think it would be very, very helpful for them to engage constructively in discussions with publishers about the terms of engagement, both of employees and of freelancers for that purpose, as Kim was talking before. Serving newspapers, journalists need to be very careful about how the clauses are in the contracts in relation to the ownership of their stuff, which is inside their mind, and the ownership of their notes, and the ownership of everything, as Kim was pointing out, the ownership of their firstborn babies. There's a tendency for media companies to be very aggressive about the acquisition of those rights, and it limits your ability to create and invest in your online future and your online personality. In the future, as journalists, one of our assets is going to be the fact that people already know who we are. I mean, that is, a byline is in fact our asset as a reporter, in a large respect. The online byline is not just the longevity of that. And if you have a blog, you can show the course of your work, you can preserve work, you can, if you fall out with somebody, you can make sure that doesn't mean that the work's all that you've done is, should all be discarded. We all have experience of that as reporters, of editors telling us, well, stop doing that, I don't like it. And sometimes they're right, sometimes they're wrong. I think as we move towards this change in terms of the economic circumstances, particularly for newspapers, that we can expect trouble. I think we're going to need to engage kind of aggressively, or quite aggressively, with the management of the newspapers, because we're dealing with deeply wounded, dangerous corporations who are avaricious, venal, and stupid. And they're not going to voluntarily come along and solve these problems by themselves. They're going to be difficult. This all applies to newspaper reports. Electronic media are going to have a golden period ahead of them. There's wages. This should be the period where radio reporters in particular should be able to finally start driving up their wages. The fact that Macquarie Bank, which I wasn't aware of, has started going after radio assets in Australia aggressively, makes a great deal of sense if you're thinking about online journalism. TV's already fragmented, or radio's already fragmented. TV is going to fragment as we go to video on demand and preview lots of TV channels, a lot more content. So there's more of a shake-up will happen on TV, but TV is also part of the future and a very, very key part of the future. So I don't think that the things that I'm saying about print journalism really necessarily apply to them. And that's the conclusion of my notes here. One thing I would finally say about the discussion about TVNZ and free commercial channels, I'm very, very frightened of the... Well, I regard it as a very serious concern, the sort of theft of the commons by corporations. And Radio New Zealand and TVNZ are magnificent assets. TVNZ is a magnificent commercial asset as well as being a news asset. And somebody pointed out that the difference between TVP and TVNZ is small in terms of the quality and the nature of the content. That's only because TVNZ is there and is providing really good competition. If TVNZ wasn't there and we had our programming schedules designed by, I don't know, Australians, and there was no...
they're all bastards. They're all...
And there was no... and
we can take a joke.
Then I would be concerned about what would happen. Imagine if TVNZ purchased or APN purchased TVNZ News. I think that would be sad. So I think having commercial free news and commercial free services is a really good idea, but do them as well. Don't sell the existing assets in order to achieve those things. But that's it. Thank you.